This is Infidel One. Offending Coyote Down. Offending Coyote Down.
Roger that.
Welcome to Trappin' Radio. We're proud, organic, free-range, wild fur farmers of North America.
Let me tell you a little story about how I was raised. Every day work, every day pray. God, family, friends, yeah, everybody sins. A winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. Help folks in need, don't fall for greed. A jealous man is weak, so think before you speak. If you love them, let them know. If you hate, let it go. Fast can be fun, but sometimes you need slow. God is all good, the devil is so real. So listen up, y'all, cause this is how I feel.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got none. Except for the good Lord up above. I answer to no one.
Now let's cover our sponsors. They do a lot to help support Trappin' Radio. So I'm asking you guys out there and gals to help support our sponsors as they keep Trappin' Radio on the air. First sponsors, Oki Cable and Trap Supply. Jeb's the owner of this. He's out of Oklahoma. Super guy. You'll not meet anybody nicer. It's somebody you're going to want to deal with. You can reach him at oktrapsupply.com. You can give Jeb a call at 918-429-4648. Not only does he do trap supply guys, he's a fur buyer, so if you're around the Oklahoma or surrounding states, give him a call with your fur. When you need stuff, give him a call and he'll get it out to you as soon as he can. Our second sponsor is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. Everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Guys, if you're into trapping fur, hunting fur, chasing fur with dogs, you're not going to be able to think of hardly anything that you can't get from F&T. You can reach them at fntpost.com. You can also give them a call at 989-727-8727. Whatever you want, F&T's got it. Wildlife Control Supplies, proven solutions for wildlife control, delivering value, expertise, and products to the wildlife individual. If you're in the ADC business, control business, even fur trapping, you need to look at these guys' website. Top-notch company, have everything you would want, even the odd stuff that ADC guys are looking for. You can reach them at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. You can give them a call at 877-684-7262. International number is 860-844-0101. If you're a wildlife control professional, you need to have Wildlife Control Supplies as one of your favorites on your computer or your phone, because when you come across something that you need specialized equipment, Alan will get it right out to you. Now let's go trapping.
See, I'm a flag flying, Bible toting son of a gun. Yeah, I'm hell on the heart, just a rebel on the run. Scared, don't know it, fear, don't feel it. The truth is the light, sometimes you gotta fight. Good beats bad, right beats wrong. I'm a barroom preacher and this is my song. I'm climbing for the top, representing for the country. I'm the people's champ, right out to dead camp. Shotgun toter, Republican voter. Hank Jr. supporter, let's protect our border. To hell with anyone who don't believe in the USA. Cause this is what I say.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got...
Hello, trappers. This is Clint Locklear from Trapping Across America. It's a little bit before ho-ho-ho time's going to be happening. I think we have one more show before that. And I'm really looking forward to spending some more time with my family as the holidays come on, because I don't know if it's just the world or what in the world's going on, but it seems like time just gets faster and faster and faster. And I've always heard as you get older that happens, but it just seems like everything gets busier and busier and busier with business, and it's like it's almost impossible just to do nothing. you know, just to sit back and relax, do things like that. It's like if we have any free time, we got to go do this or go look at that, or, you know, it's, our culture is just like crazy hyped up all the time, and it's I personally think it's sad, and that's one of the things that I personally like about trapping, which is one of the things we're going to talk about. I got a request on a question that I recommended. There's a gentleman in Minnesota that's going forward with the pet food idea that I talked about, and he's been emailing back and forth, been fascinating what he's been finding out. And he asked me to do a show on why of trapping. And the reason I say the why is because there's a book that I recommended to him, and it's called Start With Why. Amazing, amazing book if you're ever going to do anything in business. And apparently he has, and he asked me to do that. And I don't think we're going to do a whole show on that by any stretch of the imagination. I've got a lot of notes over here to try to cover. But before we get into that, some of the funny things that happen when you're in a trapping business. I think I mentioned last week that I've got a new product coming out called Coon Whisper, and it's like a bait solution for dog-proof traps. So basically you can use a high-quality commercial, a very effective formulated bait solution for dog-proof traps, but get it for pennies on the dollar, basically. So, I go down to Tractor Supply and I pick up a full bag of fish pellets. Not the stuff that I've been using, but a full bag. And it's like 40 pounds. Costs, I think it was $16.90. I bring it back. And that's about the time after I got done doing postal and UPS in the afternoon. So, I come back with that and I'm like, hey, Travis, come over here. And before you get started on finishing doing that, whatever he was bottling at the time, I said, let's find out how many pint jars are in this 40-pound bag of fish food. You know, and I was thinking it was going to be, I don't know, 40 or 50. And, you know, I guess I could have figured that out mathematically somehow. But, it's quicker. So I had him fill pint jars of this stuff up. And we shot a little commercial that I'm going to try to get up on Wolfer Nation and YouTube this weekend. I've got to get time to get it edited. Hopefully I can this weekend. I mean, it's a shame. I've got products that are really cool and it really help trappers, but I'm so busy I don't even put them on my own store. I mean, it's kind of sad, but it's just like I said, it's the crazy world we live in. So I get him to put these things in there. So we set them up, and he goes, there's 108. And I'm like, you're kidding me. He goes, no, there's 108. Actually, it's 108 and a half. And I'm like, holy cow. So we brought them in there. And I'm sitting there thinking, you know, I haven't went through and looked at what some of the fish pellet type baits or some of the stuff like that sells for. I can't imagine it sells for as high as like Monster Grizz bait or Federales or something. But it may. I don't know. And it may be totally worth it for that, but basically fish pellets. And I was like, let's set all these up and we'll give a little spill because I want to show everybody how to use this. And I'm sitting there and we're setting up each side of it. And I take the phone out and that's kind of my mobile calculator. Stuff pops in my head. So I type it in. I'm like, well, if there's 108 jars at $5 a piece, what is that in money value if someone were to buy this much? It was $540. I about fell out in the lure shed. I was like, holy cow. And then we did our little spiel, and Travis was when we got done with the camera, I'm like, now do you think that that's worth $25? He goes, oh my goodness, that's crazy. Because basically what the solution did, and I knew that this was something that trappers could use. And I've spent, you know, a lot of time, and I've got other formulations that I'm working on right now with different flavors and stuff like that. But I knew it's something that's not on the market. I have no doubt once I come out with this, there'll be cheap knockoffs and stuff like that. But, you know, I wanted something that was high quality that played on many different aspects of a raccoon and a dog-proof trap to get them there, really get them to work it. make sure there was nothing in there that didn't taste bad, and how much it would take to do the fish pellets and yada, yada, yada. But, you know, at $16, I mean, this is the power of entrepreneurship. You look at something out there and you go, let's make this better for the customer. And not so much on the product Coon Whisperer, but if you're looking to get in a trapping business of any kind, think about your world in this way. If people are using a lot of bait in traps, and most trappers have tried fish pellets, cat food, dog food, marshmallows, all kind of different things like that. And you do catch raccoons, but it's not like, you know, using something like Coon Crush and Coon Crack. There's no way. So I'm going, well, okay, that's probably a need the market may or may not want, so I'm going to give this a try. So I started on this journey probably back in June, maybe May, I'm not sure exactly, of playing around with this. And but that's how cool a free market and entrepreneur system is. Because if someone were to go buy pints of bait at just $5 a piece, for them to have the same product, which it may be the same quality or less, I don't know, I haven't really played around with other people's fish pellets, it's $540. So that $540 to a trapper means he's got to catch above that $540 before he makes a penny. Well, if you go buy a bag of fish pellets like I did at our local Tractor Supply, and it was $16.90, and the $25 bait solution, which about $3, that's just a freaking bottle to get a sprayer and stuff on there that doesn't leak, is $25 and $16. So say the price goes up a few dollars next year, and say it's $45. Think of the solution and the economy value that is to a trapper by thinking outside of the box and come up with a product that I really think the market's gonna like. It's a really cool product and it's a really high quality product. But look how much money it saves that individual trapper to do that. So when you're out trapping and you're going about your normal thing on your line and everything like that, everything that bugs you about your equipment or about the lure or about, you know, the gadgets that you use, the hammer angle, the stake drivers, the drags, the every little bit, how you carry the stuff around, anything that bugs you, I promise you probably bugs somebody else. You know, and if you think about it from not being a copier of everybody else, but kind of think outside that box a little bit, you'll start seeing there's all kind of products out there. You know, I've got some products that has been made, tested, kick butt, and I just haven't had time to really put them on the market yet, and they're sitting there. So I know there's stuff out there because I've got stuff waiting in line to put out like that. And if you think about your trapping on an everyday basis like that, and you find things that would help a customer, which is a trapper, make his life where he can make more money or make it easier, you've got a winning product. That's how simple it is. And I guarantee you, if you really took time going about your daily trap line, you'll find all kind of things that you wish was maybe just different. Or how come? Always ask why. How come we can't do this? Or why not that? Or why don't we have this? Or why does it have to be like that just because it's the normal way? You start seeing these products everywhere, guys. You really do. And then you're going to have to focus on which ones you think is going to match your personality for selling them and making them and manufacturing them and producing them and different things like that. That's where it really separates someone that can have a really cool little niche thing in an industry like trapping above trying to get something in, say, the deer industry where you're dealing with, you know, million-dollar budgets and stuff like that. So I just wanted to bring that up, but I was amazed. I knew it was going to be value to the trapper, but I had no idea it was going to be that much value. So let me ask everybody here a question. And I'm almost willing to bet the first response on a lot of people is going to be very different than what the truth is. what is your why on trapping? What is it that drives you to trap? What is it that drives you to get up at O Dark 30 and come back after the sun has went down? What pushes you to be cold, numb fingers, a lot of times hungry? You spend a lot of money on expenses and as far as fuel. You do a lot of walking. You get, you know, you're just cold and miserable a lot of times. You spend hours and hours in a fur shed doing manual labor. What drives you to do that? That's what's called a why. You know, and it's a basic, well, I would say it's a basic business principle, but even most businesses don't have a clue why they do anything. And if the answer is why, they're wrong, or money's, I guarantee you they're wrong. But why would you do something? Why do you go out and put yourself through that when you can basically sit home and play video games, I guess? You know, because, and the reason I think this is important, if you know why, if you know what your why is and you really put some thought into it, and don't just give the, you know, the egotistical macho answer that automatically comes, or a bumper sticker, or what you've read in the magazine. Why do you trap? You know, and the knee-jerk response from a lot of guys is going to be money. And I have to call BS on that, because most guys, if it was purely for the money, purely for how much money you could make for time spent, you could do other things. When I went full-time trapping, I had a swimming pool business. Now, what do you think I was making more income on when I was doing that? A $30,000 in-ground swimming pool? Or, at that time, a $4 raccoon finished? Well, I could push myself and find enough coon to make ends meet. And I was trapping for the money because I had to, because I put myself in that situation and I wanted to. I don't look back on those times as negative at all. But why? What is the why? And I think everybody's going to have a different response to that. And I will say, a lot of today, and I've talked to some other people in the industry that sell lure and stuff, I think it's changed a little bit from what it used to be. It used to be a whole lot more money involved, and I think that it's turned more into a sport, which I think is a little bit dangerous as far as regulators and stuff go, but we'll leave that for another show. And it's something people just want to do. There's a certain group of people that just, you know, they're a lot more in tune with being a predator, and predators go get stuff. And you know, that's a total natural response to a lot of people, males and females alike. You know, there's a lot of people that don't like it, and they have what I call NSD, nature separation disease. Instead of ADD, it's NSD. And actually, NSD is probably, for a lot of reasons, you have ADD, is because there's nothing real or anything like that in their lives. But what is your why? And I'm going to tell you, I've really thought about this. I got this email probably last week, probably on a Tuesday or Wednesday, if I remember right. And as I'm out doing my stuff every day, and you know, and I'm seeing nature, and or I'm packing, or whatever's going on in my life, you know, I've been thinking, why? What actually is my why? And you know, I can tell you from the very beginning, it was income based. Because being in the military, not making very much money, and a guy was going to give me $50 for Martin when my monthly income could be, you know, at least 50% or doubled a month from trapping, that was the reason. But once I got into that more than just a little bit, that changed very quickly. But I was still focused on the income part. But that wasn't my why. And at the, you know, for several years, you're running and gunning, and you're thinking about, I've got to make so much to make house payments and car payments and, you know, pay the electric bill and stuff like that. The money's always in your forethought, But that's not really the reason why. To me, and this is going to be different for everybody, the best that I can come up with for me is the learning aspect and the curiosity aspect of what's going on out there. You know, why does a coyote use this section of a road, then get off of a deer trail, connect with a four-wheeler trail, and come back on that same road a mile down the road, and there's nothing in between but wilderness? Why is that? Is there a food source? Is there, you know, places that there's more prey? Is there a persimmon tree that's dropping? Is what? Why? I mean, really, I mean, that stuff fascinates the snot out of me. And the more I trap, the more I get fascinated, because the more I learn, the more I realize I don't know. And then that drives me to want to learn. Like this year, I can tell everybody out here, my numbers are not going to be as high. I'm playing around with two different types of pieces of equipment that I've never really played around with like this before. And one of them, well, both of them I'm really excited about. I'm not going to say what they are quite yet. But when I go out and I play with these things, it's the most amazing trap line that I have. Even more than the ones where I'm making $1,200 a day or $2,000 a day. You know, because once you get to that stage where you're efficient enough to produce that much fur on a day-to-day basis, that soon turns into Groundhog Day and more of a manual labor type thing, because you can't take time to sit there and really wonder very much. So when I'm doing things like I'm doing right now, you know, presentation on one of these and figuring that out, it may not even all come together in a full year of my life. I'm totally fine with that. Figuring that out's more important to me than catching a bunch of animals right now in my life. And what I'm doing on the other thing is for mink. And this has got me just fired up. It's amazing. It's just like the portable pockets. Like, I couldn't wait to go trapping. I couldn't wait. And even though I had to figure stuff out and my catch may not have been as high, to me, a better trap line. So my why is the education, the wondering, the figuring out, the tinkering, that type of thing is what drives me in trapping. And you know, if I only focused on the numbers or the money all the time, which a lot of people think that I do, and I really don't, if I did that, I believe I would get bored. I really do. And, you know, it's hard for someone to imagine when you watch videos and stuff like Cat Collector, and, you know, you see six or eight of these hundred to several $100 bobcats sitting there, and their bellies are white as bleach paper, and they got spots, and I mean, you can almost smell the cat urine coming through the TV when you're watching it. I mean, it's hard to imagine that you can get bored, to me personally, bored doing that after a while. And I've been going to Texas for several years now, and it started turning more into something I had to do or needed to do to go catch the cats. You know, when I was playing around a lot more with the cages that Norm builds, that brought that excitement level up. Last year was a little bit different because I really started playing around with the portable pockets. You know, but I was still doing a lot of the same things I've done. This year, I'm really concentrating on these two different type way. One's a mink, one's for coyote. I'm playing around with these two different, totally different concepts of catching these animals. And it may take me a couple of years, but that's my why. You know, because I'm out there, I get to see some mornings that would make National Geographic weep. I mean, some of the wildlife and some of the stuff I see is just phenomenal. And people, and I kind of feel a sense of pride because I get to see all this stuff and experience and smell and feel all of this stuff. And as I get back on the road from coming out of a beaver swamp or something, I'm passing all these people with, looks like they've been sucking on unripe persimmons. And they look, you know, you can just see them 60 miles an hour going by somebody. You can see, you know, they're going to do something that they don't like. For someone they don't like. for amount of money that is really not enough to begin with, and they're miserable. And I just came off of seeing a swamp with the fog rolling across the beaver dams, you know, and the geese and ducks and the fish flopping out in the water feeding and different things like that. I mean, amazing. So that's my why. And it, you know, as funny as that question was to me last week, not really funny, but as strange of a question that was last week, it made me think. So that's what I want you to do. This week is you're out trapping, if you can trap right now, or if you're not trapping, why? What is it? What is your why? Is it just being in nature? Is it a way? Because I guarantee you there's you know, I've talked to some families that go out together trapping, which to me sounds really cool. You know, a whole family going out trapping. I don't have kids, but if you had kids that were interested and your wife was interested, and y'all are going out, I mean, that's better than anything on TV. I'm sure for a lot of people, that's their why. You know, it could be for the history of it. You know, I do believe nowadays there is a recognition part of trapping that I'm not sure is the healthiest, but I do see it, and you can watch it on Facebook, you know, and stuff like that. I don't show as much stuff on trapping on Facebook as I could or maybe should for my business, just for the simple fact that there is other things in life besides trapping. I mean, there really is. And what I see online is a whole lot of people that are trying to get people just to look at them, and not saying that that's bad, because trapping is a tribe. It's a herd. Regardless of how independent you want to think that you are, it is a tribe of a certain percentage of the population that for the most part is not as tight as it used to be with the internet, because you can come in contact with way more trappers that you'll probably never meet. But it is still a tribe, and it's kind of a, you know, the cool thing about that is, you know, I'm out here with you, you know, look at this double foot caught coyote, or you know, this mink, this coon did everything but try to get in four traps at one time, to you know, the sunsets, to everything else. So I think the social part of it is a very good thing, as long as the only reason is not just to look at me, you know. But that's an individual personal thing, you know. Being a libertarian, knock yourself out as long as it doesn't bother me. So, but I think you should know why, because I know there's a lot of guys that trap purely for the history. They trap just like the mountain men. Some of them even wear that stuff out as they go trapping, just to be part and be tied into history. You know, that's not my thing, but I think it's pretty cool. There's some guys that are into trapping more for the subsistence part, like Bama Trapper is down in Birmingham. You know, he traps for food. That's his main thing. There may be some other things, but that's his main thing. You know, it could be for, like I said, just being part of the sport, you know, if you want to call it that, where just as Americans by nature, we put everything in a sports type thing, just like politics and sports and video games and, you know, what our house is and what our car is and everything else. We kind of put everything in teams. And, you know, you're part of that team, and part of that team sport is keeping score. And, you know, it's an exciting thing to go from 20 coyotes to 40 coyotes to 80 coyotes to 120 to 300 coyotes. You know, because we do kind of put that sport thing on top of there. And that could be your why. You know, to me, when I was a lot younger, that had a lot to do with it. I was determined to figure out how to catch more fur faster. But still, when I look back at it now, it was because the wonder of how to do that is the reason I went down that. So that's my challenge to you this week. Figure out what your why is, then feed it. Feed it raw meat with lots of protein. Make sure that that's something that you're thinking about. It probably wouldn't be a bad idea if you're like me and you're looking at the educational and wonder of what goes on out there, Do you think I might look a little bit different at my trapping if when I turn the heater on in that Jeep to get the frost off the windshield in the morning, that I just brought that up to myself of why it's so important to me to go out and do what I do? Because so if I start getting into the commercial aspect more than it takes me away from my why, I'm probably not going to enjoy the trapping as much as I could. You know, and I don't want anybody to think that I'm putting down numbers or money or anything like that, because that's not it at all. But what is your why? And if it is for money, then every single day when you get in whatever your vehicle is and you're turning that defroster on to get the frost off your window, you need to be giving your prep talk about what it is that you need to do that day and why you're doing it. And it'll change. Because the same thing can be said if you're going out for the family experience and you get caught up in the scoring part of the sports side of trapping and you start pushing to get more numbers and everybody starts getting a little more miserable and not enjoying themselves because your 12-year-old kid doesn't want to run like he's got his hair on fire, you're going to lose the why of what you were doing to begin with just to catch numbers. So I do think that was a very interesting question, you know, from just a purely trapping philosophy standpoint, really, you know. I'm going to go to some different things real quick. If you're catching rat glands, one of the things I've been playing around with this new system of for mink is a lure that I've been playing around with that I'll be honest, I'm almost scared to even think I can put on the market because it is heavy in muskrat glands. I have no idea what that would cost if I ran the numbers on it truly to see what I would have to even make it work commercially. Maybe something I just give a formula out and let people do it themselves and let them see how expensive some of this stuff is to make. But if you're catching rats, you know, from probably now till spring, keep those rat glands. And if I decide that I can't do this commercially with the rat glands and I can't buy them, you're not going to have any trouble selling them. And even if the rat prices do come down a dollar or two this year, if you keep those glands, you'll make up for that. And now from a lure maker's point of view, I want you to listen to what I'm saying right now. If someone is buying those glands, that is a product that has your name attached to it along with your reputation attached to it. And the reason that's important is that if you try to get over on someone selling glands, like say you tried to get over on me selling rat glands, and then I'm going to talk to Jeff and Norm and the guys at F&T and stuff like that over the summer, and then you try to pull that again with somebody else. Our industry's so small, you'll cut your own throat. So just trying to get a few extra dollars ain't worth it. Trust me, not in this industry. It's too small. The way that a lure maker wants those glands, at least for me anyway, is just frozen. I don't want glycerin to touch them. I don't want salt to touch them. I don't want zinc valerate to touch them. I don't want sodium benzenoate to touch them. I don't want anything to touch them. I just want them frozen. That way I know that I can reproduce a product with those glands time after time after time. I know it seems like the smart thing to add glycerin and salt because you get extra volume and you think if it's so much a quart or a pint or a gallon that you'll get more money. Someone that's buying glands is not going to do that because they've been around long enough to realize that they're buying stuff that's not mink or rat glands or mink glands, either one, that are like that. And here's something that I do want to warn people about if you've never sold glands to somebody that's been around a while. If you sell me a gallon of rat glands, and what normally happens when you're doing glands, because I do the same thing, I've got a tub or a 2-gallon bucket or a jug or something like that, and every day when I get those glands, I put it in there. Well, those freeze, and you have airspace around them, and then the next day I throw more fresh stuff on there, then they freeze, and they have all this airspace around them, and then that repeats and repeats. Well, you fill a gallon jug up of frozen glands, but that's not a gallon of frozen glands. It's not. someone that's been around a while is going to take that gallon of frozen glands when he gets it through the mail or gets it at a convention or however you're selling it to him, and he's going to let it thaw out. And the reason I want some guys to get a grasp on this is I don't want any hurt feelings between me and you or you and another lure dealer. Because if you do that, your gallon of rat glands is actually probably going to be 2/3 of a gallon. And I've done this myself so many times with cow glands and cat glands and stuff like that, because they freeze in all these weird shapes and everything. But when you thaw it out, it's not a gallon of product. And I just want, you know, it's just one of those things that the reason I'm putting it out here, like I said, there shouldn't be hard feelings about that. Because if you're selling a gallon of glands, it needs to be a gallon of glands, not 2/3 of a gallon with air. Just saying and putting that out there. Okay, we are going to, I want to do a call to arms to trappers today. Because I've been really thinking about this. Because this is the time of year that, as most of y'all know, I'm not going to go into the permaculture thing today, but as most of y'all know, I like growing stuff. Now, this is a time of year, the reason I'm thinking about it, because if you know, I plant all these trees and all these bushes. Well, I've got my auger that I use on my coyote sets, so instead of taking carcasses out of parts that I don't use and just throw them around, I use that auger, and whatever the drip line in it is on a tree or a blueberry bush or whatever, you know, I may have 15 muskrats around a blueberry bush. They love it. So I'm using that instead of going to the hardware store and buying blood meal or bone meal, which is from animals. So that's something that I'm using the animals for, to try to get all the value I can out of that product that I've caught. Okay, we're going to get completely out of the permaculture side now. To me, I think it'd be really cool, because I guarantee you, as many people listen to this show, there's a lot of unique things people are doing with animals that needs to be on the internet. And I've got a business proposition for you at the end that you could do on your own. Not with me, but you could do on your own. So what the call to arms is, how do you use the animals? You know, I've talked to some guys that they use groundhog and coon fat to... They render that down. That's what they waterproof their boots with. That's a pretty unique thing. And the reason I think this is important is if you'll just take a picture with you or with what you've done or with a catch or whatever, and write me I don't care if it's 100 words or 300 words or as much as you want to write, but what are you doing with these animals beyond just selling the fur? And the reason I think this is important, if we get this stuff online and people start researching trappers and stuff like that, it's in the business world, it's called denying the denier. It would be like one of the things Walmart did with the guy with dirty jobs, Micro. And if this was their intention or not, it's what it is. But this is an actual marketing thing that we as trappers can do. Denying the denier. They did a commercial with Roe doing the voiceover of they're putting so much money to bring in industry to America. Now, their reasoning may be pure as driven snow. I don't know, and I'm not going to judge them for that. But the impression that people have with Walmart, and Walmart knows this because they have people that just do PR, is you go to Walmart, everything's from China. There are a lot of reasons for that, which we're not going to get into. And a lot of people really beat up on Walmart because everything's from China or Indonesia or the Philippines or wherever it's coming from. But not very much of it's coming from here. From groceries to toys. It's all coming from somewhere else. So to deny the denier, if they put $1 billion, I think is what the number was that commercial said, in helping bringing back industry to America, it's hard for someone to rant on them that they don't care anything about having anything made in America, because they're putting their money into trying to help that happen. So it's denying the denier. It's just a basic business principle, actually, if you have a PR problem. So what I think Trappers ought to do is deny the denier. So if I catch a beaver, for instance, I'm gonna skin the beaver because I'm going to sell the fur. Sometimes I've got a school market. Sometimes I've got a tail market. I can use that tail to make beaver tail oil. I've got the casters, which I'm going to use in my lure business, but is also in all kind of commercial things from soft drinks to perfumes. The oil I'm going to use, but I would say if someone wanted to try to do something else with it as far as waterproofing, or be creative, come up with something to do with it. And then I'm going to eat the backstraps out of that beaver. My two cats and dogs get to eat the part besides the backstraps. My chickens are eating the beaver fat. And then I take the bones and guts that's left over, and I actually grow and produce food and build better soil by putting those in the ground where I want them to be at my place. Now, see, that's a lot different if somebody that's just a smocker mom in the middle, which is the only person that really matters, not the extremist and not us, but all that group in the middle that can really affect the laws. If they start researching that because some laws come up, and using the power that Wolfer Nation has on the internet when it comes to the part of trapping, if they read that someone is using the fur, the skulls, the tail, the casture, the oil sacks, the person's eating the meat, they're feeding their pets, the best quality they can get, and then what's left over, they're actually using that to build their soil to grow food for them to eat. You tell me how an environmentalist, even a fake one, is going to have very much to say about that. Nothing. Denying the denier. And it's the truth. That's the absolute truth. Eat bobcats. You know, think about if it's legal in your area and you sell raccoon carcasses, you're feeding people. If, like, Claudie Taylor was catching the otter, he's relocating the otter all over the country. How do people think animals get in zoos? They just don't ask them nicely. A trapper traps them most of the time. That's how they get there. You know, besides the trapping part of that, what I'm asking you to do, and I'm calling it a call to arms, what are different things that you do with the animal? And the reason I'm calling it a call to arms is I want you to actually take 15 minutes of your time to email those to me at clint@wolfernation.com, and I will put them online. And the more this stuff we get put online, the more people will find it. If you've got a YouTube channel, or you're thinking about doing a YouTube channel, and you're eating the beaver, show how you're cutting it off and cooking it. If you're doing what I'm doing in the garden, which I've already done on several websites, where I show how I use that animal to the last degree by building my soul. Show that. Let me know the link to that. I'll put some words above it and I'll put it on Wolfer Nation. Because if we have, and I know as creative as trappers are, and probably what they're doing anyway, just make sure it's legal where you're at. You know, I don't want anybody to get in trouble. However you're using that resource, put it together. You know, explain what it is and put it out there, and I may be able to add or something like that to even try to work on the search engine stuff. Put a good catchy title on there, so we're starting to put that stuff out there. Let's start denying the deniers that say that, you know, because I'm telling you, if you really think about it from a soccer mom's point of view, we just go out and kill something for its fur. That's really kind of hard to defend against. In a modern society, it really is. Now, if you have other things that you're doing with it, and you're using a natural resource completely through, it's really easy. Now, I know on coyotes and stuff, that's going to be a lot harder. But maybe there's something. I don't know. Now, here's the business idea. Like, when I've been with Norm down in Texas, he's a very good cook. way better than I am. And there's a lot of other people that cook. Now, if it was something like, if you do, and this is something else I wish you would send me. Send me a picture of the meal after, or before you eat it, but after it's cooked. And if you use, if you've got a recipe for beaver and coon and muskrats, and I'm not talking about as a hillbilly, toothless, redneck joke recipe. I'm talking about a real recipe. How do you cook it? It could be in one place. Now, for the entrepreneur out there, you know there's not really a trapper's cookbook. I know I would be interested in it if it was good. What's some different ways I could cook my beaver or my bobcats or different things like that? Or is there a way that I would want to try to figure out raccoon a little bit better? Where are the glands at on it? Show how to cut the meat up. Different things like that. You could easily have a trapper's cookbook. And not just for trappers. The survival market would eat that up. Now, would you make $1 million off of that? No. But you could probably make an extra, especially the first 5 or 6 years, probably an extra $4,000 or $5,000 a year. You know, if you went out and that was your thing. If you went to conventions and just started asking people how they cook stuff, I guarantee you some of the old timers have got some really cool things that they've done with that. And it's just a business opportunity that's sitting there for someone that's interested in doing that. You know, but the call to arms, however you're using that animal, take the time to send it to me. And let's start, it's start putting, like I said, it's start, I'm not going to say fight back, even though I think we should, which is another show entirely all of itself. But let's start putting information out there that makes people that are in the middle, which are the ones that matter, when someone just tries to say a bloodthirsty, you know, redneck is out there killing stuff just for its fur and, you know, and the animal and all this crap we hear. But if that same person reads how someone uses every bit of that animal all the way down through there, it's going to be really hard for that person to buy into the nonsense that the extremists are doing. You know, and just think about it this week. Because throughout everybody's trapping career, we've done some kind of crazy things. And one thing I've been getting some questions on, which the weather's pretty much sucky right now. There's no question about that one. But with dog-proof traps, what's the best ways to keep the water out of them? Z-Trap has got a cap. I've never used it. I know, I've talked to some guys that do, and they really like it. And the reason a lot of the baits that are on the market, now this isn't going to really apply to something like Monster Grizz bait. I'm trying to think of something else that's out there that if it rains on it, it's not going to matter. But if you're running just purely fish pellets or something like that, the water hits it, they disintegrate, and for some reason the animals don't want to mess with it as much. Cat food's really bad about that. Marshmallows get hot, melt, and sometimes they'll freeze into a concrete block under there. But to keep rain out of there, I've used several different things. My favorite's a golf ball. Yeah, I can buy them used. I can set them right on top of the trap, put some coon crack on there. The raccoon will take the ball off. Then there's a little more coon crack in the bait in the bottom of that thing. And it's cheap because you can buy used balls around golf courses by the bucket for next to nothing. I've used the little eggs at Easter. They fit in there pretty good, actually, and do the same thing. The issue is raccoons have a tendency to break them, and possums have a tendency to break them and try to eat them. And this doesn't do very well. I've used the styrofoam cups. The reason I quit using the egg is me personally, there's no judgments going on here at all, but me personally, I don't like going out to the woods and leaving stuff. I just don't quite think that is being a steward on a trap line. And I've played around with the styrofoam and the paper cups. Paper's better because at least after 4 or 5 rains, it's going to go away. The styrofoam will be there forever. And if you're going, and if you're having rain getting your traps, and you're using the styrofoam in your own private ground, and the landowner comes out there after season and he sees, you know, where you've caught 6 or 8 or 10 raccoons and there's paper, or he's just going to say trash everywhere, there's a good chance you're going to lose that property or at least get a stiff butt chewing. And from the landowner's point of view, I think he's right. You know, if you use something like a little Dixie cup that's made out of paper, the cheap ones, they will disappear pretty quick, but that's a personal choice to you. The golf ball seems to be the best because nothing can really destroy it, and most of the time, unless you're right on the side of a riverbank or something, it's just right outside the circle where the coon knocked it off, and he got caught, just kind of, it gets just rolled out of the way. So you don't lose them that much. I've used metal cans, and I've been amazed if I've been around places that, like a soup can, raccoons really don't have a lot of trouble getting those off, and mice have a really hard time of getting in there. Now, a golf ball, a mouse, you know, like a big gopher rat, I'm sure can knock it off, but just a regular field mouse or a vole or something, he's going to sit there and have to really eat his Wheaties to get that golf ball, because to him, it's really heavy. The tin cans did work. They did work pretty well. I've used aluminum foil, but there I'm back to. I'm sitting there trying to get all that stuff up just because I don't want to leave it there. So it's wasting my time after the catch, even though it does its job during the catch. Now, as the cold weather keeps coming on, that moisture becomes more of an issue with a lot of the dog-proof traps on the market. As most of y'all know, I really like the FB1s. That's a push-pull trigger dog-proof trap. Now, what I'm getting her to say also goes for any push-pull trigger, whether it be a dagger or a Z-trap, or if there's another one out there by now, and I'm sure there is, it's push-pull. If you've got your bait below that trigger and it's coming almost up to the trigger and it gets wet, then it freezes, you've got an ice cube. Now, the trap will still work if the coon pulls on it, but you've paid for the advantage of having the push. If you let moisture get in that trap and freeze, you're going to run it down onto an ice block, or basically just think of it as a rock. So your trigger is not going to be able to go down. If you're going to be using a bait that can freeze when it gets moisture on it, and you're not going to cover your traps, guys, at least run that bait down where it's no closer than 3/8 of an inch below the trigger. So when the fulcrum part of that trigger starts going down, it's not going to run into that frozen mixture before it has a chance to fire. It'll just really, really help you out, because freezing in those traps cause a lot of problems. Now, freezing in like a Freedom Brand 2 dog-proof trap, or a Duke, or a Grizz, or I'm trying to think of other ones that are just pull, the T4 from Bridger, all those, if you've got a frozen mass in the bottom and the coon still wants to work it, well, that's really not a bad thing, because now you got a solid block he can't get away from the trigger to get it up. Now, the question is, if it freezes to the metal in the bottom and he can't move it, well, then you're kind of screwed then. I think you're better off to use something to cover that if you can. And a lot of it can just be as simple as if you're on a creek bank and you've got a bridge to set under it, it's going to stay dry. If you've got hemlock trees or fir trees and you can set under it and it's still on locations and that's where the coon are going next to, set under that. That'll stop a lot of the moisture problems and different things that you'll have just by simply looking around and realizing if the trap's out in the open and it rains, if it rains a half inch, you're going to get a half inch. If you put it under a hemlock tree, you're not going to get a half inch under that hemlock tree. And if you put it on the bridge, you're probably not going to get anything. So just trap placement alone, when you're running these dog proofs, whether it's a push-pull like the FB1 or just a pull like the FB2, kind of know what's going on. And the more you use them, you'll kind of figure some of this stuff out. I want to talk about finishing one of a set that a lot of guys don't use anymore. When it comes to coyotes, and I think it's a mistake, it's a little more messy to deal with on a day-to-day basis, but it's something, if you do it right, it's an absolute coyote killer. And it's something, again, where the weather really doesn't mess with you as long as you've got your trap in a way that's blended in with peat moss and grass, or just grass or leaf covering or hay or something like that. Something that the water can't mess your trap up with. A buried bait set can take a foot of rain in 10 minutes and still be working as long as the trap's working. Now, buried bait set has a lot of different meanings to a lot of different people. And when I'm saying a buried bait set, the way that I mean it, and the way that I personally use it, and the way that I've had the best success with it, is if, say I'm driving down the road and Fluffy the house cat got smacked by an 18-wheeler. Well, one, if I stop and get that cat, it's taking me probably 2 minutes. And you know what that cat cost me? Zero. So when I catch a coyote or a fox off of this, I've got more profit in that fox than I do anything else. So I like stopping for stuff like that because it's a gift from the trapping gods as far as you making more money on your trap line. The same thing goes for when I was out at O'Gorman's. Every snake he came across on those gravel roads, we're going 80 miles an hour, he'd lock that 3/4 ton Ford up, go all over the road so he didn't have to walk as far, and he would get every rattlesnake that got hit, that got up on the road, and he was using them at his sets. Roadkill deer, if it's legal in your area, if there's someone out there that gets deer parts, you know, like there's a lot of ADC guys that pick up roads for counties and cities, something like Mike Seaton does in Pennsylvania. I don't know what the legalities are, but I would talk to them. You know, they got to pay a lot of times to take those to the dump by weight. If someone wanted some hams or heads or, you know, something like that, or back legs or whatever off of those, there may be a way to work that out, is what I'm saying. I've had a few times, now if you're a turkey hunter, don't get excited about what I'm getting ready to say, but I've got a property that I trap in Alabama that has so many turkeys. If you put a set in a field within a week and it's green, I'm going to catch a turkey. And it's not because they're messing with the set. I don't think the birds even realize that anything is there, because I've watched them from a distance. I don't know if they smell. I don't think they do, but they don't seem to be interested in a dirt pattern or a hole or what's in the bait. What happens when you have, and I'm talking mass turkeys, you know, 150 turkeys in a flock crossing the field, just pure percentage chances, one of them is going to be unlucky and step in a trap. It happens every year. It doesn't happen every day. It doesn't happen every month. But down there, every year I catch turkey. And I get kind of excited about it because it gives me something that I can use in several different ways. One, I strip all the feathers off of it for my bobcat trapping. And then I've got this turkey meat. And every single time that a turkey has stepped in a trap by accident, it's half eaten. And I'm checking every day. So, I mean, there's never been a turkey that hasn't been half eaten in a trap, ever. So I can take that turkey, and I can take my Pulaski or a good sharp shovel, and I can cut that thing in half. So I've got two baits now plus my feathers from a bobcat. And then I also use beaver carcasses for this. Muskrats, coyotes have a tendency to rip into, so it doesn't work as well. But if you wanted to, we'll go into how maybe we could use that here in a second. House cat works pretty good. Roadkill house cat, a deer head, a deer ham, different things like that. Think of something with some volume and it's natural. And best of all, it's free. So you've got this turkey like I was talking about, and I would take that turkey half and I would run trapping wire down through the ribs and bones or hips or whatever part of this turkey I'm using, and I would hook that to a wolf fang steak. And then I'll do that on two different sides, because I don't want it swinging around. I don't want it to be able to be stolen from me, because if they take it away from me, that's what coyotes do when they find something, they run off with it. If you allow them to do that, they're no longer around your traps. You kind of screwed the pooch on it. So you don't want to do that. So I want to have two anchoring points with my wolf fangs. And then I'm going to go somewhere. My favorite locations for this is I go down a road that's not a heavily traveled road, you know, like a logging road or a farm road or something like that. And then when I come up to some cover and that road's got coyote sign on it, I'll start looking for everything from a rabbit trail to a deer trail going into that thicker stuff. And then I will take the turkey that I've got with those two stakes on there, and I'll take a shovel and I'll dig a hole so that turkey's going to be at least 3 to 4 inches under the soil level. So underneath that soil level, I've dug out this bowl. I put the turkey down in there, and then on, if you can imagine, you've got, just say this is a basketball, and on two ends, you've put in two type of fasteners, you know, like the little screw things with the eyes on the end, on the sides. You could drive those straight down, but it won't work as well because it'll move around as much. So if you take the basketball with the two eyelets and you drive them away from the ball on 45 degree angles, it's pinning that thing where it can't move anywhere like it can if you drive them straight down. So I'm putting those on 45 degree angles opposite of each other. I used to do this with T-bar stakes. It is a mess to get your T-bars back. They're kind of gooey and they get all over everything. And to me, if I'm especially, you know, coyotes are bringing decent money and I'm doing ADC work, I don't worry about getting the wolf fangs back out. They're disposable. That's why they call them disposable stakes. But I drive those in there and then I will take about 2 inches of dirt and I will put that back on the turkey. Now I've got those feathers, and they'll come into play in a minute. And then I will get some type of debris. I'm not really making something like a cache set, but I'm just making it look like something's disturbed. And then I will take two of the smaller, or three of the smaller feathers, and I will tuck it up under there. Most of the time when I'm doing this, there's pine straw or leaves or grass that I can cut real quick and kind of set on top. But I'm not making a pile. I'm just making it on top of that dirt where it looks like something disturbed. And I put a little bit, just three or four of these little bitty feathers just for a tad of eye peel. So basically we've taken a bait and we've hidden it. Just like we were going to try to hide it. So we've got this, it's off of a road and it's on some form of a trail between a rabbit and a deer trail. Don't care what it is. As long as the road has got coyote sign on it. I'm going to put that set in there about 6 or 8 feet. On the upwind side, on the prevailing wind of that road. If you're in any type of rolling hills, it'll be on, if you're looking down the road and you got a hill on your right, you want it on the right because the cold weather, the cold air is going to come down at night, push the odor downhill. So that's going to be your prevailing wind at night, regardless of what it is during the daytime. So you got to think about kind of where you're at. Going back to the wondering how stuff works. So I've got this in the trail. I'm going to put on that trail, I'm going to put a trap about 18 inches back. I'm going to blend it in that trail, like a blind set, but it's going to be 18 inches back on both sides of that trail because I put it right in the middle of the trail. And then I'm going to come back to where that trail meets the road, and right where, if you drew a line across the cover, wherever that starts at is right where that next trap goes, but have it out where the jaws are just coming up to that line. So if you've got a straight line, or you put a ruler down where the trail starts in the grass, you want your jaws to touch the ruler. So it's actually going to be out in front of it 2 or 3 inches. The pan is, if you can kind of follow what I'm saying. What happens on this set? If you're an impatient trapper, this may not be for you. If you really like catching coyotes, you're going to love this. It will not work for about 5 days. So it's not something that happens immediately. But once it starts to break down a little bit, the odor will not be trapped under that ground. A coyote walking down the road with the wind coming from the bait that's under the ground to the road will smell it immediately. You can, which I don't always do this, but you can with something like a beaver, drag that up the trail to the spot. And they'll be just like a little cartoon dog when they hit that beaver trail. They'll circle a little bit, and they'll put their nose down, and they'll follow that right over your trap to the bait. They'll smell it. Now, because it takes usually 4 or 5 days, and if it's hot in the summertime, you're talking about a night. But in the winter, it'll take that, even with frozen ground, a few nights for it to click off. But the reason it's such a deadly trap, if you noticed, I haven't used commercial urine. I haven't used commercial bait, and I haven't used commercial lure at all. There are no dirt patterns at all. It is blended the best that I can make it where I've got to try to remember where the trap's at. Keep that in mind. It's extremely natural set to a coyote. He smells something that's been killed. There's no sight of man anywhere around. He's going to work it really, really quickly and aggressively because there's no man-made anything there to kick off his phobia part of his little paranoid brain. If you could run a full trap line with these things, you'll be amazed how much you catch, because you catch bobcats and you catch fox and you catch possums and you catch coons. Everything works a set, but the coyote especially seems to work it. Because it's not on the main travel way, a lot of times the coon and stuff will bypass it unless they're going down that trail. You want the feathers just for a little bit of eye appeal. You want those three different traps where if you're going to stake them where they can't get caught, same animal can get caught between the two. This is a good place for drags or cabling them off in opposite directions, so when you catch one, he's just out of the way. And this is a really good system where you can catch doubles off one set for coyotes, because once the other ones just get strung up somewhere, now you got a lot more action, smells, noise, stuff like that, and the other coyote's going to find that baited set, and he's going to be hyped up, so he's not going to be thinking as clearly as he could be. So the buried bait set, it's an oldie, but it's a goodie if you take the time to use it. The reason most guys don't use something like this on a regular basis, me included, if you go out to put 100 of these in, you're going to need 100 of these baits ready. And then when you move the line, you're going to need 100 more. And in between that, when stuff gets ate and everything else, you're going to need some baits to fill that in. So it's not a practical way to run a full line. But it is a very deadly way to pick up extra animals while you're running your more traditional sets. And it doesn't take a lot. And the cool thing about it being underground in no hole, the water doesn't fill up. And the water that does get in there on that animal helps it decompose a lot quicker. The stakes keep it where it is. If you don't stake it down the way I'm talking about, when a coyote gets a hold of it, he's going to jerk it if you just try to cheaply use one stake. And he's going to bring that out of where the set is designed to catch it. So if he grabs the head and swings it around, you don't no longer know where he's going to be at, because you got to think of the distance where he's going to be standing and pulling to where he can get caught. That's why you want it to be secured tightly into place. I've never really done one wired to a tree. I played around with some chickens, and I've caught some coyotes that way where I kind of hide them on the side of a tree. It doesn't seem to work as effectively as the berry bait set. Now, this is an old school set that's caught a lot of stuff, and it really works on the programming of the coyote's brain if you go to use it. Like I said, I don't think this is something you're going to run. If you're just running 12 traps and you want to catch coyotes and you know where they're at, this will catch them. No questions, hands down. But the more volume of equipment to get out, logistically, it just gets hard to do. So if you come across a roadkill, house cat, or someone smacked a deer, or you see a dead groundhog, something like that, stop, pick it up, throw it in the back of it. Just have a little gut bucket in the back of your truck. And when you're going and you find the place that you get really excited about and you want to put in a dirt hole, and maybe you want to back it up with a buried bait set, knock yourself out, because it's going to be very productive. Now, if you're using small, I have used these back before the bird flu and the government got all crazy with the chicken houses, where I would dig this bowl just like I would do, and I could dump in a gallon of those little bitty chickens. I'm talking like twice as big as a golf ball. They die every day at the chicken houses the way they grow them. So, and I could just get buckets upon buckets upon buckets of these things, and I used to. The bird flu, basically USDA put the squashes on that unless you know a farmer good enough that he's willing to take a chance on being a felon for you. So that may not work anymore. But what I would do is I would just dump that in there, do it the same way. A cow couldn't get all the chickens at one time. So once he found the stash, he'd be back over and over and over and over again, and he'd get caught. The reason I brought that up, if you're trying to use muskrats, if you're somewhere you're muskrat trapping, you try to wire down a muskrat, a cow gets a hold of it, no matter how you wire it, he's going to separate the meat from the bones. So that's not going to work as good. If you were going to use muskrats, I would cut them in quarters with a machete, and I would make sure you got 6, 8, 10 pieces down in that bowl that you made. So when a cow gets a hold of one, he's going to run off. If you didn't catch him that first time, he's going to come back and back and back and back. And just the law averages, he's going to step in the wrong place sooner or later. And the cool part about the smaller bait sections like that, if you get a family group working it, they're going to be across from each other as they're trying to eat. And if they're working that trail and it's really thick, you've got a chance to catch two of them really quick. Just to throw that out there a little bit. Now, guys, we're going to be closing right now on the show. I hope y'all are having a great season. Really think about why you're trapping. If you're using animals in a where you're just doing more in the fur with it, email me what that is. Put it in, 150 words or whatever with a picture. If you're cooking with it, what are your recipes? And when you're going out to trap this week, try something different. Not the whole line, maybe 5 sets. Try something different. The wackier, the better. You never know what you're going to learn. So I'll see y'all next week. I hope y'all have a good week of trapping.